Welcome to CrimeWire, the place for information, news, and most importantly, justice. Our interactive website is www.crimewiresite.com. You can call in anytime during the show. The number is 1-646-478-0982. And remember, you can participate in tonight's show simply by going to the live interactive chat room here on Blog Talk Radio. If you are a friend or family member and would like to send CrimeWire information on an unsolved or suspicious death case, or have a specific crime-related topic you'd like to have discussed on a future show, email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com. Tonight's topic is the Haley Dunn case. I'm Kim Colton, Director of Research for CrimeWire, and I'll be manning the switchboard and monitoring the chat room. And now let me introduce the host of tonight's show, statement analyst and CrimeWire consultant, Peter Hyatt. Good evening, Peter.
Good evening, Kim. Good evening, Karen. Karen Galp is with us, also a private investigator and statement analyst. And Karen, thank you for being with us as well.
Oh, well, you're quite welcome. And hi, Kim. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Karen. Hi, Karen. It's nice to have you on board with us again tonight. I just love it.
Great. Well, I enjoy it. It's always a lively conversation.
It is. It is that. Right, Peter?
Well, Karen brings in not only, a very sharp view in terms of her analytical skills, but as we've touched upon before and will tonight, she appears to me to be someone that has a gift of teaching, that she's able to explain things in a way that is understandable for the audience, and she seems to be able to anticipate people's questions ahead of time, and just that basic standard gift that teachers have, which I think also they pay a price for in terms of the fatigue that comes from being inspirational. So I'm one of those old schoolers who really supports teachers having off in the summer just to recharge those batteries, because, and I think Karen has highlighted this, in a statement analysis, we're not simply looking at the statement, but we're looking at what we expect to hear before it happens, and that takes creativity. And creativity, the downside is exhaustion. So, Karen, I'm very pleased that you're able to join us, and as you know, it's an open ticket to appear whenever you're able to. But we'd like to talk about some of the analysis that's been done and update listeners on the Haley Dunn case. So I know there's other pressing news out there and the tragedy that happened at the Boston Marathon. My own son was at the scene, and for the first time in the last few years, he decided not to video the finish line, which was, a providential move away from that area, which was great. His girlfriend was caught up in it and was evacuated from the area. So it was obviously an upsetting time, and we were glad to hear that he was okay, and we feel for our listeners that are down there. Also, our own Nana Francis is in the hospital, and she's a real supporter of justice, a retired school teacher, elementary school teacher. Yep, and she has pneumonia, and Heather and I gave her a call before the show, and she'll be catching up with the show. So, Nana, I hope you're feeling better.
Yes, we wish her good health. Speedy health recovery.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say a speedy recovery to Nana. Thank you. Oh, my goodness. She's a wonderful lady.
She really is. And she is someone that has followed the case of 13-year-old Haley Dunn, who, like so many of our listeners, saw the pretty smile and was just gripped and was afraid and wanted her to be found. But Nana is also an intelligent person who, when she saw the Nancy Gray show and read the analysis, she was able to discern and realize that there were indications of deception there. And as the case has evolved, Nana, like so many others, has had a good grasp of what's happened. And we come to, I think, a critical point in the case now. And it's critical not simply for what's happening, which is we're on the edge of breaking news, but a critical understanding for those who follow statement analysis, and Karen had touched upon this previously, and we're going to revisit this again with some news, is what Karen referred to in the last program as leakage. and we've covered this in the last couple of years, but this is probably no better time for us to address it than now. What leakage is part of the scientific content analysis, is that when someone speaks, not only are we looking for simple truth or deception, but we're also listening for content. And at times it can be very simple. It can be something as simple as this, where I said I went upstairs and I made the bed. And by calling it the bed, statistically I'm likely to be a married person. And even though I didn't tell anyone I was married, by calling it the bed, I've opened that possibility. It is something that we all do. It's something that no one is exempt from. And if someone studies statement analysis, it doesn't teach them how to lie. It doesn't make them sharper. They can attempt to watch their words, but it's still going to happen. And what has come upon us now in the case of Haley Dunn is that a month ago, remains were found. And they were found in Scurry County, and there's been no identification of the remains made public to this point. There have been those on the scene, some who saw visibly, others who had heard from others, and information comes out, but that's not the leakage that we're addressing tonight. So, Karen, I'm going to, before I get to the details of the case, I'm going to throw it to you and ask if you would just a basic understanding of how you describe the words in our minds with marbles. You
yes.
can take it from there.
Well, yes, I'm a very visual person, and I find that by creating a visual concept to explain to somebody, it makes it so much easier for understanding. And what I look at when I see the brain, I see it as a bunch of storage units. You know those storage facilities that have like tons and tons and tons of storage units? Well, imagine your brain is one of these storage facilities with billions of storage units. And each storage unit represents, let's say, like a day. So, okay, then we can't say there's billions of units, but there's thousands upon thousands of units. So each day, each unit represents a day in your life. And from that day, you have memories. And the memories are represented by marbles. Now, imagine one of these storage units, you know, the kind where you have to pull up, the door is the kind you pull up from the bottom in order to open. And inside your storage unit from that particular day, you have red marbles, green marbles, blue, gold, whatever. And if you are asked to access knowledge inside your unit, inside that particular day, what's the first thing you have to do is you have to open the door to the unit, correct? So in the process of opening the door, imagine what happens with a bunch of marbles that are stacked inside that unit. They start rolling out. Now, if you're not hiding anything, if you're telling the whole truth and nothing but the truth, then you have no problem with the marbles rolling out. It's fine. They can roll out, and you can use. In fact, I guess the marbles represent words. Each marble, as it rolls out, you can acknowledge it. Yes, there's a blue one, there's a red one, there's a green one, and let them flow out. However, if you are withholding information, intentionally withholding information, I'm not talking about if you've forgotten information, but if you're intentionally withholding information, then your brain knows that, oops, I've got to keep the red marbles inside the locker. And as you run around trying to scurry and capture the red ones and put them back in the locker, number one, you're not going to get all the marbles because they're all flowing out. Number two, as you run around, guess what? You're going to be slipping and tripping, and your actions are going to be kind of jerky, and you're going to get out of breath. You're going to get fatigued. You're going to make mistakes. And that's what happens with leakage. It's not information leakage in the sense of, you know, saying something that revealing information. Oh, I know this information, but I'm not supposed to tell you. It's more language leakage, because language is how we communicate our thoughts. That is the conduit, and these marbles represent language. And we have seen now in many statements where we have where we've seen the leakage come out, the language leakage that is telling us something. And that's why in statement analysis we say every word is important, because every word that the person says or writes is telling us what their brain knows or thinks.
That is amazing.
In fact, I was just speaking to a a detective who I was cautioning to make sure that he redacts the statement for analysis, change the name, if the first name is whatever, change it to John Doe. However, don't change the principle. If it's John in one place and Johnny in another, it's got to change. If it's a capital letter, it's now gone to a lowercase letter, that must be done, because every word and even every letter is going to matter to us. And what we're faced with now, and I hope that listeners will be able to grasp this, is that CrimeWire is not, we're not journalists. We're not journalists per se. We don't have to report anything. We are people that are interested in truth, and we're certainly interested in justice, but there's no end game of having the scoop. And so I'd like listeners to know, and what many regulars already know, but perhaps new listeners, is that if there's information that we're given that we've been asked not to share, we're not going to share it. If, and this goes for cases all over the country, not simply in Texas, but all over the country and Canada and elsewhere, if there's information that law enforcement would prefer that we not share, it doesn't get shared. If the analysis shows something that's very sensitive, I run it past law enforcement first before I share it on the blog or on radio. It's not a case of journalistic integrity. What the integrity of the case is more important than anything else. So we don't answer to a board of editors who are looking for the next big scoop or that sort of thing. And there are people in all around the country who contact us with information, especially locals, who often do so in confidential manner. And this leads me to the question, Kim, this is what I emailed you this morning about, or earlier today, about people sometimes challenging that information. I had received a phone call several weeks ago, a most unpleasant phone call, and which led me to put a post up on the blog about that phone call. And one of our regular readers of the blog analyzed my post and saw the unpleasantness as if she was sitting in my living room listening to the phone conversation.
Oh, my gosh.
She did that good of a job. She noted the passivity. She noted the additional words that would appear to be meaningless but actually held a lot of content. She actually entered into my emotions as I typed that. She did a wonderful job of it, and I applaud her for that. So we look at passivity in language. Information has been received is passivity. I'm deliberately withholding information by saying it in that manner. It may be because I'm lying. It may be because I've been asked to withhold the information, maybe for a number of reasons, but what the analyst can tell is that he is deliberately withholding information. He's withholding responsibility, accountability, identity, or something like that. Well, that is part of the nature of these cases. So Karen and I have some written statements that we believe from our work that we know the author of these letters, and that it is information that our readership would be interested in. We're not able to share that at this time. And if we can, we will. We have received, I think at last count, 4 accounts regarding the crime scene itself. Regarding talking about leakage, the remains that have been found that do strongly suggest that these remains are Haley Dunn's. And someone had asked, and this was the challenge that I received via email, is no police officer, no law enforcement officer would ever write on a blog or share information. And I really thought it was really a very silly statement for someone to make. And as I thought about that, I looked on the news today. What happened was someone had sent me an email challenging the veracity of someone that had posted on the blog. Specifically, we're talking about Point Hunter, the name that was used, saying, right, you know, my name is Curtis Lloyd, and I was at the scene. I'm the one that was quoted in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. And this person wrote to me saying that you've been put over on one there. You've been duped because no one who's real law enforcement is ever going to post on a blog someplace. And what saddened me about that was that the person challenging me, it's not only foolish, but that person should have known better, because what she should have been judging by was the language that the poster used, and not some silly police officer would never post. I don't know how many millions of police officers in one form or another we have across the country, but like any profession, there are certain standards that are there, and there are certain standards that are not met. But just in opening the news today, I noticed that 49 cell phones were confiscated by authorities. All 49 of them belonged to police officers who were taking pictures of Pistorius, the Blade Runner, who had shot his girlfriend.
Oh, right.
You know, they're looking to cash in on or share the information with others. We had a host of FBI who were, you know, supposed to be the best and brightest, sending naked pictures of themselves to drug dealers, getting involved in that whole scandal. So any profession is going to have that sort of type of behavior, any profession, and every profession. But to classify, to say that you know, law enforcement wouldn't be posting on a blog, I know firsthand that not only did law enforcement read the analysis that we post, but when they post, they do so anonymously, because they're emotionally attached to a case. And I have told some that it's fine, please just post anonymously or choose a goofy name or something like that. They are as interested in a case as others. At times they have to be careful. They don't taint the case at all. But they want to talk about cases. They're just as interested as anyone else. And it would be completely against human nature to think that they wouldn't.
Right.
Some of the judge in the Casey Anthony case was emailing back and forth with a blogger that he found interesting, Marinate Dave. And he had to recuse himself from the case because of that. So if someone who has 25 years experience in the FBI and went through school at 4.0 is sending sexual text messages to someone else, it happens.
Yeah, you would think it would, right?
Sure. Some of the Texas Rangers that I had spoken to going back when this case first broke had said, yeah, we look forward to analysis every morning with a cup of coffee and seeing what the mother is saying now on TV and looking forward to it and enjoying that. Well, they're no different than you or me. They, except in the sense that some of them have been out on the line, looking for this child, listening to the insults and the taunts of the mother, her boyfriend, her lawyer, and not pleased. And so there's going to be a reaction. Well, when the I'm going to say Point Hunter, instead of saying Curtis Lloyd, Point Hunter was posting, you may look at his statements with the same lens that is used in all statements. The same lens that saw my short paragraph and entered into that unpleasant conversation where I was leaking out my anger and even a kind of a returning insult back, which it's not right, but I did, As one of the readers who is not a professional, who is not a professional analyst, did a marvelous job with it, so should the same thing be with these comments. And so, Kim, this is kind of comical. Someone was enjoying for a while posting as if they were Sean Atkins. And,
right.
And people do this sort of silly stuff all the time, and enough words and we'll know. In this case, the words that the person who called himself Point Hunter, and some people did follow up later on with fake profiles, Point Hunter, but the words that I reposted showed veracity. He had no issue with straight sentences, with the pronouns, with the past tense verbs connecting himself to it. There were no indications of deception. And later on in a personal conversation with Mr. Lloyd, I found him to be, just as his words revealed, a truthful, intelligent, and honest person who, like everyone else, wants justice for this little girl.
Right.
So he was, he said that he was limited in what he could describe on the blog, and he said he might have gone a little too far because he felt a little provoked by some of the questions, and also, like any of us, feeling impatient. Hey, it's been a month. What's going on with the remains?
Right, right. Exactly.
So, yeah.
Exactly.
If at any time there is information that we would like to share that could at all hinder the case, we're not going to.
Right.
And some of the listeners will pick up that there are gaps of time that we're jumping over, or there's passivity that shows that we're concealing. Karen and I even discussed the possibility of canceling tonight's program so as we to be careful not to leak out what shouldn't be leaked out. And
yeah,
even
exactly.
As Mr. Lloyd, sure, and we're no different than anyone else. When we begin to enter to that free editing process, we are as subject to the principles as you are, as anyone else is. And so we want to be careful, and as things hit the news, then it's fine. One thing you'll notice is that when I analyze a statement over the years, it's always from the media. It's always public information. It's not information that was done privately. I won't jeopardize a case. Karen would never jeopardize a case and mess with it in any way, shape, or form.
No.
And so even going back in time to the time where I interviewed the mother on another radio program, even that was in correlation with law enforcement. It's just not something that I will get involved with and mess the case up for anybody.
Yeah.
Right.
And, Peter, actually, can I add one real quick thing in here? Because it's something that I think that we've touched upon or danced around in terms of with everyone asking why hasn't something been done. It's been a month. And why is it taking law enforcement so long to gather the evidence? They've had 2 years. In defense of law enforcement, because actually cases that I have worked on have been, have gone into the courts. And so I know what it takes to put together a case. And today, nowadays, it is trial by process. It's no longer trial by evidence. It's trial by process, so that law enforcement has to be extremely careful about how they have obtained their evidence and to make sure that every T is crossed and every I is dotted. They cannot afford to make a mistake because then that evidence gets thrown out.
And when we say law enforcement, that is a very broad term. What
it
that
is.
Could mean is a local police officer who has a high school diploma, all the way up to the prosecution team, who are lawyers, who may be extremely talented, extremely dedicated, and everything in between.
Yes.
So it's a really broad statement to make. Sometimes people say, why aren't law enforcement, why are they trained in statement analysis? Well, many are, but like anything, there are some that are experts at vehicle maneuvering and safety. There's others that are experts in firearms. There are some who are experts in language. And any of us could sit through a course on statement analysis and complete the course, but it is like, and I've likened it in my own visible thinking, to teaching someone the chords on the guitar. You've now been taught all the basic chords on a guitar. It's not likely you're going to put on a show for people having just known those basic chords. It's going to sound awfully rough. For me, it has taken hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of statements per year. And I recognize that 365 days a year, and sometimes I've done 3, 4, 5 statements a day because I love it and I absorb it so much, over the process of years to become good at it. And it really seems to take someone, like the detective I was communicating with earlier today, who is just incredibly zealous to learn and willing to apply it. If a law officer on the street gets that type of training, that, depending on the population, that law officer, he might have 10, 15, 20 interviews a day, short interviews. And if he's constantly putting these things to practice, he's going to be sharp as a razor just by the fact of the process of osmosis as it seeps into his system, and he does it so often. So when we say law enforcement, it is a very broad term. When I say in terms of cooperating for law enforcement, what I mean specifically is not posting something that they feel might not be wise. All it takes is a subtle hint that they may not want it posted, and it doesn't go up. We're not
right.
New York Times. We don't answer to editors. There's not money to be made off that sort of thing. We're just seeking justice.
Mm-hmm.
In the Billy Dunn case, interesting, her private investigator pointed that out. He said everyone calls it the Billy Dunn case. They don't call it the Haley Dunn case, because the mother has just, in an almost unprecedented manner, has taken to the airways, television and radio, like nothing I can think of in recent times. She's quiet now since the remains have been found. She's been quiet. Only one statement early on. But even that statement was done after her attorney said she won't be speaking. So from several confidential sources, we have been told that there is an article of clothing that was found, and I won't reveal beyond that, an article of clothing that was found near the remains that would suggest it would belong to a female of about the age and size of Haley Dunn. And this was from, I believe, confirmed 4 confidential sources collectively.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
and there's obviously, there's more that people would have seen at that time, but this is as far as we're willing to go at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Some
exactly.
Astute readers were able to look into Mr. Lloyd's words and to seeking out an opinion from him. He is not only law enforcement, again, that broad definition, is those who enforce the law, including prison, federal prison supervisor or manager, but his family is law enforcement, his friends, his circles are law enforcement. The idea of justice is dear to him, and he is invited on this show, and I hope he will come on soon. But he was, I think, obvious in his remarks of whom he thought this was. I don't think there are a lot of missing bodies perhaps buried in that area due to the population and that sort of thing. But also, Karen, I'll put this to you. Billy Dunn, the mother, made statements very early on, made them early, made them often, made them numerous. Most of her answers have a pattern of going well beyond the boundary of the question, making it sensitive. She has been very quiet since that statement. I looked back today, and I could run this by you, Karen. This is, I think, a powerful statement. One of those statements that are so powerful that I wonder how could anyone, even to the untrained eye, not have heard her words. It was shortly after her daughter went missing, on January 13, 2011, so 2 weeks later,
mm-hmm.
the affidavit was released, and the affidavit was a Nancy Grace bombshell. It really was a shocker. She said to the media, "The important thing people need to remember is not slandering me."
Yes.
"The important thing is there is a 13-year-old who, it seems, just disappeared into thin air."
What do you make of that?
Go ahead. Do you have it in front of you?
Yes, I do, actually.
Okay. Because I'd like to look at that in light of making a deliberate attempt to stay away from the areas of leakage.
Mm-hmm.
And focus in on this being so close to when her daughter first went missing. Want to take that statement a little bit and work through it with me?
Okay. I know you had, I think you had posted something, because I don't want to repeat your analysis. You had posted earlier, I think it was on today's blog, I believe, about this, or reiterating about this, the fact that the most important thing here, she puts it first. The order of importance, when a person reveals information, they talk about it in the order of importance to them. And for her, the fact that not slandering the mom, for her is more important than reminding people that there is a 13-year-old girl out there that just disappeared. So that shows us where her brain, it knows what it knows, and it's revealing what it knows, and that is slander against her is more important for her than this 13-year-old girl who is missing or has disappeared. The other thing in that sentence that I had looked at, it's actually the second sentence. "The important thing is there is a 13-year-old girl who it seems like just disappeared into thin air." And now, again, to me, I saw "it seems," and that's leakage, because that is what her brain thinks about. Her brain views it as "it seems." Now, this is 2 weeks. Her daughter has disappeared. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Her daughter has disappeared. Right?
If I could stop you there. You had done a work on the expected versus the unexpected, on the case of Isabel Chellis.
Yes.
Isabel Chellis' parents were going on television, and what you did, which I thought was a great exercise, was made a list of things that you expected to hear, and this is where we talk about common sense, and the things that you expected to hear of parents who had reported their 7-year-old kidnapped was words like kidnapped,
ransom, yes,
telephone call, all those sort of things, and you gave us a list of the expected.
Right.
Then we were confronted with what we didn't hear, the unexpected. In the case, and in this particular statement, what I wanted to ask people was, and Kim, either you or Karen can answer this,
mm-hmm.
is what would you expect a mother to say the most important thing is?
Find my daughter. Help me find my daughter.
My daughter is missing.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter.
Not
a 13-year-old girl, but my daughter.
Right. My daughter, and not seeing.
Or my 13-year-old daughter.
Now, what if the brain knew, and this is quite a stretch, but knew there was no evidence at all
to
give a clue to anything? I think my expected is this. She disappeared into thin air. That's
right.
What happened. I wouldn't say "it seems like."
Right.
And I think even the effort it took to add in that extra word.
Yeah.
First of all, it's almost a shocking narcissistic-type statement. I have a 13-year-old missing. Parents that have a missing child, their loved ones, when we covered the Chiron home run case, I pleaded with those close to the mother to stay with her, make sure she's okay, make sure she eats, because a parent of a missing child, even in my own imagination, I can't think of anything except what that child would be going through. When my children were little and they cried, I got up and I comforted them. When they cried for food, I fed them. When they cried to be changed, I changed them. When they fell and they bled, I put the Band-Aid on them and I kissed the boo-boo and I made it all right. Now, I am utterly impotent and completely frustrated and helpless because I can't do anything. And that parent is going to experience things that I would wish on no one, and they would need to be told, okay, you've got to eat, you've got to sleep, you've got to be strong and take care of yourself. I can't picture any parent going before a camera and saying, hey, the things you people need to think about is not slandering me. Because there is it's my. What people said, how did you know that there was drugs involved in this case? And it was very simple. Because the mother of a missing child said that she had a toothache. So, well, how do you know that's drugs? When someone has the presence of mind to talk about their own discomfort, instead of what that child is experiencing at that moment where they can't help the child, they can't run to the child, something is very, very wrong.
Oh, yeah.
When baby Ayla went missing, the police said to the father, Justin DiPietro, okay, we'll set up within, it's going to take us a couple hours, media will be here, we'll go on your front lawn, we'll put the microphones in front of you, and you can speak directly to the kidnapper so we can start to get your daughter back. He said, quote, I'm not emotionally capable of doing that. His emotional comfort was more important. And then when the media finally did get him to speak, he talked about, people don't know how hard this is on me. Nancy Grace needs to come up to Maine and find out how difficult this is on me and what I'm going through. Well, Nancy Grace producers tried to, and he wouldn't come out his door to talk to them. Just the fact that someone, while their child is missing, can focus on themselves, it's completely the unexpected. The unexpected. And this statement itself, I think, should have rattled the media. Like someone should have said, did she just say that? Did she just say the important thing
right.
people need to remember? Karen, the second part of her statement,
mm-hmm.
first part, the important thing people need to remember
yeah.
is not slandering me. The second part doesn't have the same emphasis.
No.
The first one mentions people. The second one does not. What happens with that?
First of all, because it is second in her list, obviously it shows us that it is not as important as the first one, as the first important thing. The other thing is, the important thing is there is a 13-year-old girl. So this is, A is used for usually things that are unknown, a general statement. As opposed to her, she is not saying, my 13-year-old girl.
Kind
so
of
she's
far
distancing
removed.
Herself.
Yeah, she's distancing. It's like she's far removed from it.
Right, right. So she has actually not only placed this second, but she's also distancing herself from the 13-year-old, some 13-year-old girl that's gone missing. She's not claiming that any relationship with this 13-year-old who has disappeared. So I think the fact that she then qualifies it with it seems like just disappeared into thin air. She can't stop at the important thing. There is a 13-year-old girl who is missing. Or, who has disappeared. She can't stop there. She has to add in these other words in order for her brain to, remember, we don't like to lie. People don't like to lie. And this is why leakage happens, is because the brain, the person is trying to fight with holding in what it knows, holding back what it knows, at the same time not lying, but including words that then would let them sort of get around the corner and allow them to say this. And so by inserting things, words like it seems disappeared into thin air, those two things lessen the lessen the message of that the girl has disappeared.
It almost has a feel to it where I agree people don't like to lie, but it has this feel to it that she is telling the truth, that the case is she doesn't come out and say she disappeared into thin air, because that would be a lie.
Exactly.
But as everyone is shrugging their shoulders going, you know, she didn't take anything with her, and there's no traces of where she went, and she was just going to a sleepover, and we have this really concerned mama, and I think she's truthfully saying it just seems like it.
Exactly. And that's why I say she had to insert those words in order for her to be able to say the rest of the sentence. It seems she could not say who has just disappeared. She couldn't say that. Who it seems, and then notice the word like was also in there. It seems like just disappeared. So the it seems and like both are they diminish the disappeared. In other words, it's sort of like disappeared, but not it seems like. It's even further diminishing it. So, but it's interesting that she had to use those words that it seems like in conjunction with disappeared. And I'd like to also mention, too, that she's not the only one that's done this. Sean has also done this. In a February, I think it was the February 8th interview that he had done, the reporter had asked him about about his affidavit, about where he had been, where he had gone, and the fact that his cell phone pings showed that they came from Colorado City when he had said he had gone to Big Springs right after having left work or having quit his job and left work. And what Sean said then, and I'm going to read this, quote, "Well, that, the investigators asked me, they never asked which specific place that I went. They go, where did you go Monday when Haley supposedly disappeared? And I told them I went to Big Spring and that's where I was at. Now, the word that popped right out at me was supposedly, because he's attributing this to the investigators saying this here. Now, think about it. What is the reality by this point? Has Haley disappeared? Yes. There is no question about it. Haley has disappeared. What they don't know at this point in time is why she has disappeared. Is she hiding? Did she run away? Did somebody take her? They don't know that. But the fact that she has disappeared, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So an investigator is not going to say supposedly disappeared because she has disappeared. But what's coming out here is, I'll say, why does supposedly appear? That's Sean's language. He now, similar to what Billie Jean did with it seems like just disappeared, his mind says supposedly disappeared. And what does supposedly tell us? Any thoughts?
Anybody?
Well, supposedly is something that it supposedly means you don't really believe it. You know, someone supposedly did this, but you have doubts as to whether this is true or not. But at this point in time, should there be any doubts that Haley has disappeared? No. So the fact that he interjected supposedly, that was his brain saying, well,
there we go.
Yeah, it leaked. That marble rolled out of the locker. And
yeah,
he couldn't
he's
say,
acknowledging,
you know, when
what
Haley disappeared, but when supposedly disappeared. And that was back, like I say, February 8th, 2011. So we're still, you know, within, you know, less than 2 months since Haley disappeared, and there's no evidence one way or the other whether she ran away or whether she, you know, was kidnapped. But she, there is no doubt she has disappeared.
Now this is the quote, and I have to tell you, I don't understand how someone in media could hear this and not ask a question. Here's the his whole answer. Well, that. The investigators asked me, they never asked me which specific place that I went. They go, where did you go Monday when Haley supposedly disappeared? And I told them I went to Big Spring, and that's where I was at. That's where he was at, not where he was going, that's where I was at.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't ask me which way did you go to your mama's house or anything like that. They just asked me where I was so they could verify that. Now, taking that leakage, two more examples. When was the last time you saw her, Billie Jean? This is Nancy Grace asking. And then asking again and again, just trying to get a straight answer. And then she finally said that she checked on her that morning when she went to work. She seems like she was sleeping.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. This is
right.
The language that we use to describe
her
body.
Oh, boy. Exactly. Yeah.
Here's another example, the same thing. When we were able to pinpoint when they went out looking for drugs. We went out and we got home. Well, if you're going to go home, we know you're going to get home. There's no purpose in mentioning that. So therefore, where did you go before you stopped home? And Nancy Grace did pick up on this, and she had been tipped off, obviously, by the affidavit and some of the locals. There was information that was being given there. And you know, it's like saying, they didn't ask me if I stopped off at an ATM machine to get cash to buy drugs. So I didn't tell them.
Right. Omission.
It leaked out because of the unnecessary connection between the two, the jump in time that they make or the unnecessary. Another major point, and Karen, I know this might be a little bit of a curveball, but I think it's something that listeners are really beginning to grasp. Is the sensitivity of the word left. And I've given several examples of this over the years that I hope is helpful for people. And Kim, please feel free to interrupt with a question from the chat room, especially if we tangle with this one. But let us say that I was in the living room and I went to the dining room to eat. So I was in the living room watching television and I went into the dining room to eat. Some very straightforward sentences, even telling you why I went to the dining room. But if I said to you, Karen, I was in the living room, I left the living room and went into the dining room to eat, I know that you would focus questions on the living room.
Right.
Because what my marbles slipped out was important to me. My leaving the living room was so important, yet it's unnecessary because in order to get to the dining room, I have to leave the living room.
Exactly.
I can't stay there. Therefore, it's unnecessary, making it what we call doubly important, left. What we notice in the questioning that was done, even through this whole program, the integration program that I was quoting earlier, was her focusing on David left, and then David left. What that was telling me was that what happened to Haley could not have happened to her until David left. And this is why we mark that as very sensitive to someone. It is the leaving of a place that means there's missing information. Something happened there. There's a reason that person's brain is on leaving. Someone had once asked me about a particular statement, and they were talking about I went to a deli, I ordered a sandwich, I left the deli, and I went to my mother-in-law's house. And what does that tell you? And I said, it tells me that something happened at the deli. And she said, what do you mean? I said, well, you you went to the deli to get a sandwich, and then you went to your mother-in-law's house. In order to get to your mother-in-law's, you have to leave the deli. So what happened at the deli that you're not telling me? And her eyes went wide, and she said, this is amazing. It was a Saturday, and I ran into a coworker, and we had words, and et cetera, et cetera. But I didn't want to talk about that.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
This is that very simple process where we listen carefully to the words. I'm on record as saying that Sean Atkins should be believed when he talks, because it's really difficult to find any single sentence that he is outright lying once he starts talking.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's actually one of the basic principles of statement analysis, which is what we call total belief in the subject. That's where this plays in. And total belief in the subject actually it's kind of a hard concept for many people to understand when they get going with statement analysis, because automatically it brings to mind that the subject is being truthful, and that's not what it's telling us. It's telling us that when we believe that what the person is saying, we believe them when they say it. Because if we listen to their words carefully, we will see that they do say things in there that if we believe it, that what they're saying, it actually fits into the puzzle.
Could you address this, Karen, total belief in the subject, with the statement you just read about thin air? Is she, in her words, not our interpretation or someone else's spin, is she technically lying in her sentence,
no,
in her statement? And
no.
that's she's not.
Exactly. And that's And you know, in dealing in the world of truth and deception, so many times deception is thought of as the person's lying. Well, you have to understand, how does a person lie? There are many ways a person can lie, omission being one of them. It is possible, and this is one of the things that I think I talked to you about at one point, about truth verification versus detection of deception. I find truth verification goes only halfway, because it is possible to tell a totally truthful statement but still be deceptive. And that's why we have to, if we come at a statement from the perspective that the person is being truthful and that we should believe what they're saying, and we look at this sentence, we can then say, yes, she believes that it seems like just disappeared.
Yes,
that
she did not say that she just disappeared.
She disappeared.
Yes, she did not say that she just disappeared.
Exactly.
There was an analyst on HLN who said during the Casey Anthony trial, Casey Anthony was providing us with many marvelous examples to work with, and I think Billie Jean Dunn has surpassed it in terms of the volume of the sample. But this analyst said, this expert with years of FBI training, he said, I know when Casey Anthony is lying because her lips are moving, and everyone kind of chuckled. And what that does is it just dismisses everything that she says. Well, she was telling you that the remains were close to the house, if anyone was listening.
Right.
We, in total belief in the subject.
Exactly, because,
yeah.
Yeah,
we have
in there.
To grab
the information
that.
Is in there.
To dismiss someone because they're a liar and say, well, I'm not even going to bother with her, she's a liar, you're missing all the valuable information that you possibly could grab from.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is the part where, and Colin, you did this with, I think, a great job with Mark Redwine, is that even as he spoke in attempting to defend himself, he was using words that made that sounded like combat.
Yeah.
That brain knows what took place.
Right.
Well, in Billie Dunn's statement, that brain knows what took place. She had posted on Facebook or someone, and perhaps you can address this as well, the subject is dead, the statement is alive. We're not analyzing the person, we're analyzing the statement, wherever it came from. A statement was posted on Facebook that since the remains were found, that basically said, thank you, to all the searchers. I made a list of the searchers, and at one point it included Mark Kloss, and then later on it deleted him because he had called for public shame upon Billy Dunn. But it was a thank you for all your years of searching, your dedicated searching. And she actually deliberately left out people that were the locals that actually did search physically, who are maybe not popular, and she left them out for whatever reason. But that itself is something we expect someone to say when the searching is over.
Yes.
Not while it's going on.
People can say, you know, I'd like to thank, and they do. Parents often say, you know, I want to thank everyone for all the work they're doing. But to post a thank you notes are sent at the end of something.
Yes. And this was something that seemed quite conclusionary. And then,
right.
Then came the silence.
Mm-hmm.
Your opinions, anyone can weigh in, including from the chat room.
Well, I just want to say that we've got 3 minutes left, and Point Hunter is quite the topic of conversation in the chat room. Peter, if you could briefly, why do you believe Point Hunter? Let's remind our audience. And Boston Lady had commented, I thought Point Hunter was concise and straightforward, came across very believable.
She's very intelligent.
Yes, she is. Hobnobs said,
she's
funny
crazy.
How it, she is. She's great. Funny how a single word can tell us much. And then another thing, and I think we're going to run out of time here, but you can always hear the ending at archives, but when did Billy last see her? I mean, it seems like her statements are all over the map. Last Monday, Sunday at dinner. What, you know, when was it? But let's do these things point by point. Yeah. So why do you believe Point Hunter? Let's get to that.
Actually,
briefly.
Boston Lady, she answered that question. His sentence structure was clear. It used pronouns, past tense connection. I phone interviewed him, and I found him to be the same way. Truthful, straightforward. No qualifying. He was able to use pronouns to tell me what he saw. There was the connection. Next
Excellent.
Question.
Well, the next thing is Billy seems to be all over her statements with the last time she saw Haley.
It was around the time that night when David was leaving. Sometime after David left and before that morning came is when Haley left this earth.
When of course, Billy said it seemed like she was sleeping, which, of course, if anybody is even a parent, or let's just say human, you know if somebody is sleeping or not, especially
sure.
when they're a child. Karen, any last words?
I'm sorry?
Any last words from you, my darling?
Oh, no.
Sounds like an execution.
not in the time frame we have. We'll have to continue this another time.
I know.
Because I always have more to say.
Okay, blindfold or cigarette, you get your pick.
Well, I think we have a few more minutes after the
yes,
live broadcast.
Yes,
okay.
We do.
We've looked at and just touched upon leakage. We have given information from confidential sources that claimed that there was an item of clothing on the scene. There are other things that we have not yet reported and will not report unless it is okay with those that are charged with finding justice for Haley. Astute readers can see that within our language where sometimes passivity enters in and it is deliberate, and I think it's wonderful that they're listening that carefully. Karen, why do you believe that the remains have taken so long? And Kim, if you'd like to weigh in as well, why has it taken so long when Caitlin Markham, when her remains were found 2 days later, they gave us the information? This has been a month now.
Well, as I said earlier, it's in today's world, it's trial by process, not trial by evidence. And
great answer.
Yeah, they have to make sure they have this thing totally locked up. They get one chance, and so they're not going to make a mistake on this.
Are you saying that
that since it's a trial by process, that the delay has been due because they're doing due diligence and working on the case, or just having trouble with the identity itself?
Well, I'm not in the in the inner circle there, but based on what I know, I think it's the due diligence, that they are making sure that they have everything that they need in order to be able to make the arrests, and also then make sure that the prosecutor has everything he or she is going to need to be able to be successful with this case.
Do you think there would be an arrest first and then a release of the ID of the remains, or the release of the ID of the remains first and then an arrest?
Well, I guess it would really depend upon the flight risk factor. I would think that, you know, they may want to look. They may want to look at the flight risk factor on this. The fact that how close is, you know, how close are they to the Mexican border? I mean, if this is something that, you know, for example, you know, Sean and Billy say, "Oops, you know, we're out of here." How fast? How soon could they get across the border? So I think that by revealing information before they make arrests would probably not be a wise thing. I would think they'd want to do it concurrently.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer. That was my own thinking, that either that they be arrested first and then shortly after we get the ID, or concurrent.
Yeah.
Colin, have you do you feel that you could comment on, having read enough of the media reports in this case, on media not hearing what Billie Jean Dunn and Sean Atkins have said? Is it a willful ignoring? Is it a lack of training? What's your opinion on that, if you've read enough articles to comment?
Well, I think where my opinion, I would base my opinion on what I have seen in terms of the transcripts of what's reported as being what's said by the person versus what they actually said, because I think I mentioned this a couple of shows ago, that when I get a statement in, if I have the opportunity to listen to the original interview, I do. Because I want to make sure that every single word that is on the page is exactly what the person said. And I have found there to be little changes and differences in the language that's written in the media that, yeah, you know, for a general idea, does it make a difference? Not really. For statement analysis purposes, yes, it does make a difference. Yes, I do think that maybe the media would benefit from taking statement analysis courses and understanding better why it is that every single word is so important. I think they also, too, would become better interviewers. Some of them are great interviewers, absolutely, but I think they could better their skills if, in fact, they took a statement analysis course and learned a little bit more about listening to every single word rather than trying to listen just to the message that the individual is trying to impart.
It's a good answer. I'm in Maine, and this particular case that we're talking about is in Texas. And then there was the case of former Representative Anthony Weiner, who is back in the news again. He's got, I think, $1.5 million in a fund for campaigning that he either has to spend or give back, and he's not going to give it back. So when he was questioned, for those who don't recognize the name, he had been sending via tweet pictures of himself and his genitalia to female constituents around the country. One of them he meant to send to one particular woman, but he hit one of those buttons, like a reply all button, where it went to thousands of people.
Hmm.
Oops. Can't
leakage.
Take that back. Well,
that's
media
leakage.
Yes. I don't want to touch it. oh, that's even worse. Media pounced on him like a shark on blood.
Yeah.
The complete opposite of what we've seen with the Haley Dunn case. They listened to his response, and his response was that his account had been hacked, and he used passive language, and he gave indications of deception. They pounced on him. In their defense, that is part of the New York media culture, where there's a good number of them competing and calling out questions to him. And we saw it in Florida. I can't remember, Kathy Bellich, was it? One of the reporters down there just did an excellent job on the Casey Anthony thing.
Yes, that's correct. You're correct
in
with
Texas,
the name.
Okay. In Texas, and Kathy yelled out to, which was really interesting, Casey had the perp walk on the Nancy Grace show. It was, you know, a live arrest. And Kathy yelled out, "Casey, why do you strut like that?" Because she was literally full of glee and strutting in front of the camera. Well, in the case in Texas, what we've had is people asking really soft-pedaled questions about Billie Jean's own feelings. And I got the sense, as I read through these things, and some that I saw the video, and a couple that were lies, that they were courting her in order to have her back on and grab an exclusive, and then it would say KTAB spoke exclusively, and or Big Country News spoke exclusively, that sort of thing, where they were fighting for just the slightest breadcrumb. It seemed consistent to me. No one in local media was asking any difficult questions. No one said, "Did you have anything to do with the disappearance of your daughter?"
Anyone asked that?
No. There was only one time where Sean was asked that, and his answer was, "I would never do anything to harm that little girl."
Right.
He avoided a reliable denial. He could not bring himself to say that he didn't. But I have not been able to find any straight questions posed of her, as if media has gone out of their way. Now, in defense of some of the reporters on the ground, I know firsthand that some of them would have liked to, but were muzzled by their editors. So I think that they have this desire to almost court someone into giving an exclusive, yet avoiding asking any difficult questions. It's hard for me to imagine how someone can hear an answer like we looked at earlier. You know, the important thing for people to remember is not to slander me and not ask some follow-up questions on that. It almost has that feel that no one is going to have the courage to ask good questions. And I think it's
frustrating. Well, if Oprah interviewed her, I'm sure she would.
The way she interviewed Lance Armstrong?
Yeah, she was. She had some tough questions in there that she didn't let him get away with. His answers. She nailed him on a few things, and I think she would. You know, this type of question or this type of answer, that had she heard this type of answer, I think she would have jumped all over that.
Is it a small town media thing?
I don't want to. Small town makes it sound like they're not intelligent, or you know, that they're not as well versed in interrogation as some of the other the big media interviewers are. But I think you are correct in the sense that they do not want to antagonize the person, because the person can get up and walk away. And right now, what they're trying to do, and I've listened to some of the interviews, and I'm thinking that, you know, they're getting a lot of actually good information. For example, Mark Redwine, he talked and talked and talked and talked and talked, and that actually is a good interview when the person just goes on and on and on. And while some of the questions were not pointed questions, they weren't easy questions to answer in terms of trying to figure out what it is that the reporter was trying to find out, nonetheless, she got a lot of really good information out of Mark that I was able to analyze. So I think – being antagonistic. It takes real guts to be able to stand up to some of these people and call them out. And because you're essentially, in some ways, calling them perhaps close to being a liar in a few cases. And that is always a very uncomfortable thing for anyone to do to another person.
Sure. But what I mean is not that they're insulting the intelligence, but culturally there's a big difference. We had a case of a man in Florida, a firefighter, who was driving up to Maine to sell drugs, and he had a girlfriend here, and this was some of the same reporters that covered Casey Anthony. He was shot and murdered here. Reporters from Florida came up here, and the case was still a whodunit. The reporters staked out the main suspect's family's home, and they looked up and researched which homes did the family own. They staked out in the woods these different homes, so when he showed up, the police came to arrest him. The media was already there. One of the law enforcement officials here, who has since retired, screamed at them that he was going to arrest them. And the Florida media was shocked because they are of the culture that we ask tough questions, we put microphones in people's faces, we go for it, similar to what was going on in New York City with the politician. And here, I can say that this, the culture here, is something that just isn't done. And no one had warned these poor people, and it was caught on YouTube. One of them was running the camera, and the officer, he was a football coach, has a booming voice. And it was like the clash of two cultures. He is screaming at them, and they are like afraid that, you know, we're in the woods someplace and we're about to be arrested here. What's going on? We're just doing our job. So I wondered if in the small town, which is where I'm here, if they have there a similar mentality that culturally just isn't done, that type of confrontation, that type of interviewing.
It's a politeness. It's a level of politeness, I think, that in some areas, especially a smaller town, that you would find it definitely more than in a big city. In a big city, you're going to have more competition.
Yes,
between the reporters.
Yeah. Peter, Karen,
mm-hmm.
I have to say we're going to have to wrap it up now.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but thanks to our public relations team at ImaginePublicity.com, our next show will be next Tuesday. Tune in as we continue to analyze cases that wreak havoc on families looking for answers and seeking justice and discuss crime-related topics with the experts. To hear a rebroadcast of tonight's show, go to www.crimewire.blogspot.com. Turn on your volume at your computer and the show will automatically play. Until next time, God bless and stay safe. And Karen, thank you so much for being with us tonight. And Peter, as always, wonderful. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
It was fun being here. And thank you so much, Kim.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you, Peter. Good night, all.
Good night.
God bless and stay safe.